Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Active Optimist podcast. This is Arena, your host, the Active Optimist. With everything I do, I want you to believe that you don't have to be depressed forever. I truly believe that depression is the ultimate cry for help, not for happiness, but for connection back to ourselves and what truly matters. I'm here each week to support you, bring community, and give you daily actions to address the social, psychological, and biological causes of depression so that you can step into the life you know you're meant to lead. I'm so glad you're here. Let's dive in. Hello, everyone. Welcome to this week's episode. I'm so excited for you to listen to this because we have our very first guest, Kamini, and I'm so glad that she was able to take the leap and was open to sharing her story. Her vulnerability is amazing. She's beautiful. She's intelligent. And I know that you will find something in her story that will resonate and just speak to our general experience with depression and our general experience as a human being and hopefully enlighten you and just help you feel less alone. We're all really in this together. And so many of these feelings, so much of depression is in fact universal. Before we begin, thank you, Kamini, for your vulnerability in sharing your story. I am truly honored to have the opportunity to have sat with you and then further to share this with the world. So without further ado, let's take a listen.
I'm so excited that you're here. This is amazing. I'm so excited to hear about your thoughts about depression, your experience with mental struggles, fitness, health, illness, depression, all of that. So yeah, how are you? How are you today?
I'm good today. I feel like, you know, it has been a pretty emotional time. I just graduated, but I feel like I am good with all the tools that I have. I feel like I have a better handle on my mental health like now than I probably ever had. So I feel happy about that.
Yay. Well, congratulations on graduating, of course.
Thank
what have you.
You
done recently to help your mental health? Or what did you do during school to, you know, help with that? Because I know that can be really stressful.
Mm-hmm. I feel like this last year I started trying to journal. And more recently I've started to meditate. And I feel like both of those have been useful and just kind of new ways to approach like dealing with my mental health. I feel like I have always been someone who really benefited from like talking to friends about how I feel. And I think that was one of my goals for this year was, you know, even though I think it's really amazing to have a community and a support system to talk to and talk things through with, I feel like I always wanted to learn how to kind of do that, even if everything else wasn't there, you know, so that I didn't feel like I needed to be talking to someone else about how I felt. And I feel like journaling has been a good start to that, but I feel like meditation was more like of a good fit for me for what I was looking for in dealing with my mental health in that way. So yeah, I feel like those are the two main ways that I've been doing things this year, and always, you know, talking to friends is just super, super beneficial to me. And I think just having a strong community and support system is like probably the biggest way that I handle my mental health.
It's really cool that you were able to have friends that you were able to talk to with, and then meditation. So how did you get into, first, how did you get into meditation, and how were you able to, you know, break that, you know, stigma barrier that a lot of people struggle with? Because a lot of people, I feel, with myself included, when I was really depressed, or honestly, oftentimes when I'm struggling with my mental health and just feeling bad and just feeling fuzzy and whatever, I don't really talk to people. And I'm still struggling with like breaking that barrier and having that relationship with people where it's in a normal conversation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I feel like when it comes to the people who I'm friends with, for me, having depression or having bad periods in my life has always just been part of who I am, kind of. So I feel like I am not a person who has a ton of friends, but the friends in my life are like really amazing. And I feel like I have that relationship back and forth with all of the friends that I have. And it's almost something that I consider when I meet someone, not to say that, you know, obviously I feel like you shouldn't rely on your friends to like be your therapists, but at the same time, having friends who are like emotionally understanding. I mean, it's not even to say that like when I'm feeling down, I like the first thing I do is just pick up the phone and call a friend and like tell them everything that I'm feeling, you know? But I just feel like when you have friends who can be empathetic to how you're feeling and kind of sensitive to that, it really does make an impact on the way I feel, you know? Just to have someone recognize where you're at and validate your experience, especially because I feel like I don't have that from my like family support. So that is something I find really important in my friends.
Well, that's really insightful, and just putting it at the center, or not even at the center, what you think of as a friend. Am I able to talk about this stuff with them? Because honestly, now that you say it, of course, that should be not like a requirement, but part of what friendship is.
Yeah, totally. I feel like, you know, I am the type of person who likes to be there for others emotionally too. So I understand that like not every person likes having that as part of their like friendship dynamics, which is like totally fine. I don't feel like everyone needs to be ready to be the most emotionally supportive person, you know. Mm-hmm. But I know that it's important to me, and it's definitely something I seek out in my friends. Mm-hmm.
So what would you tell to someone who has friends but they don't know how to broach into that conversation? Do you just come out and just say it, even like when you're comfortable with them? Mm-hmm. Or what would you guide someone with?
Yeah, I guess reason for why it's so important to me now is I had a lot of bad friendships when I was younger, especially when I was in high school. I had a lot of friends who just were not very, I guess, empathetic. We're not very like willing to meet me where I was at. And I think it's something that I noticed over time and felt more that it reflected a problem on me, in that I was like overly emotional, and people would tell me I was like sensitive and things like that a lot. And so I feel like for me, it's just a connection that you understand, you know. I think we all like have bad days, and there's people who kind of blow off when you're having a bad day. And there's people who want to ask you how you're feeling and ask if they can help, you know? And I think just like small things like that from people really show you a lot about their character and their emotional like capacity to be able to do that as a friend. Yeah, I feel like to a certain extent, it's something you just have to get better with over time too. I definitely had to go through bad friendships to understand like what was important to me in a friend.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I mean, I totally get that. In high school, was that when you first struggled with mental health, or did it kick in college?
I feel like I had struggles with my mental health probably even younger than that. I feel like I first became aware that I was like feeling really sad. I don't think I could ever like label it as depression, but I recognized I was feeling really sad for long periods of time. Probably around when I was like 11 or 12. I think for me, a lot of it was because I was also like grieving. I like lost my mom when I was really young. And so my depression kind of went like hand in hand with that loss and feeling really alienated by that loss. Yeah, it was something that I started to feel at a very young age, but it probably wasn't until I was like a senior in high school or starting college that I started to recognize I was like actually really depressed. And I think I come from a kind of culture and family where it's not, people don't like label it as depression. I feel like there's a certain normalizing of sadness and like, you know, life is sad, life has sad moments. And I think because of that, I always felt there was nothing more sad about what I was going through, or more difficult about what I was going through, so that I needed to label it depression. You know, I was kind of just like, this is just life and everyone feels this way sometimes. And you know, I just have to get through it. So, yeah.
Yeah. I feel that with a lot of families, a lot of families don't like to label it as depression because, yes, like there's real reasons. Obviously, your mom dying and just a bunch of other things, whether you're struggling socially or academically or whatever, really. Any like mm-hmm. bad thing that's happening to you growing up. So it's good that you recognize that that was where it's coming from, because a lot of times I think that we detach the real life events to our mm-hmm. mental, what's happening mentally, when it's not directly in the story of what grief is or whatever you're yeah. dealing with.
I will say I only started to recognize that when I got to college. I think before that, I was just like, I think that's part of why it was so difficult feeling depressed is it seemed there was nothing to be sad about. Because I wasn't really allowing that space for my like grief to be a part of that depression. And I think it's definitely true what you're saying. Like there's so many kids who have just a lot of different circumstances that are causing them to be depressed, whether it's like family issues or living circumstances mm-hmm. or financial issues. Like all of these are different pressures that are put on kids. But I feel like we as a society kind of tell kids, oh, you're just teenagers. It's normal to be feeling, you know, your emotions up and down. Like we kind of invalidate it in those ways. So mm-hmm. yeah, I think that was a big part of why no one ever told me you're going to be grieving for mm-hmm. a long part of your life. You know, it was never something I expected was going to be part of who I was. And I think it took mm-hmm. me a long time to realize, like, you know, it's so fundamental to who I am now, and it's having this loss in my life has totally like shaped me. But I think until you get to a place where you can really call yeah. the things you've been through, call it for what it is, you know, it just is difficult to even understand why you're feeling mm-hmm. depressed.
Yeah. So in terms of grief specifically, there's a lot of misservice, I think, with that, because especially in the psychiatry area, in that area, they oftentimes try to put a limit on grief and they say you should be sad for this amount of time. And if mm-hmm. after that, it's probably depression, it's not grief, when they don't recognize that sadness and grief and just the loss of anything or anyone that you love will obviously expand past whatever the, you know, the DSM-5 says. So, and that's what they go off of. Then they'll just label you as mentally mm-hmm. unstable when you're actually like suffering with that. But then also what you were saying, that you were actually able to call it what it was and that changed for you.
Yeah, I think when you just asked when I started to feel issues with my mental health, I think the reason I felt it around those ages of 10 or 11 was because for me, that was when the newness of my grief had really worn off. And so for the people around me, there was no more feeling of a need to kind of tend to my grief. When I reflect on why I was feeling sad, like so much of it had to do with feeling like there was something missing from how I was able to deal with life. And I think especially around those ages, 10 or 11, you know, you start going through puberty and it's so confusing. And I just didn't have a woman in my life to really guide me through that process. So I think I just started to feel more and more alienated and less like people cared that I didn't have a mom. You know, I didn't really have people who were, you know, I did have like people who tried to be there for me in different capacities, but mm-hmm. you know, no one can really replace what having a mom like on a day-to-day basis is like. And so yeah, it was just really difficult to start to go through the process of becoming a woman when I was living with my mm-hmm. father and two older brothers, you know. Yeah, I think that as I got older, I realized that so much of what I was feeling when it came to insecurity and just feeling really uncomfortable in my body all kind of went back to that time in my life where I was really feeling just very unsupported during that big time of transition, you know? So one of the ways that in college I started to kind of deal with that is I started to just develop more significant like female friendships. And I think that that really, you know, especially to me, Anna, your sister, and I feel like she talks to me a lot about her relationship with your mom, her relationship with you, and just having a really strong, a really influential mother in her life. I can see how positively that impacted her and shaped her as a person. And I think just being around women like that is such a positive and like empowering feeling, because it makes you realize there's people who are just living in their femininity in such a beautiful way. And I mm-hmm. think that was really important and freeing for me in kind of recognizing what mm-hmm. I missed and allowing myself to have that as an adult.
Do you think connecting to your femininity and your body help you in just feeling who you were and just mentally? And
yeah, for sure. For sure. I feel like so much of what I was depressed about when I was growing up was how I looked. I was like super uncomfortable in my body. And I started, you know, going through puberty when I was really young, and it was really confusing, and no one explains to you really what's happening beyond like a sex ed class. And mm-hmm. I think it took me a long time to just get to a place where I feel comfortable in my body. I think especially it starts with just the physicalness of your body changing, but then really soon after that is this like this whole thing about male validation and just being viewed by people and the way you're perceived. And I think that led me to develop like a really negative internal dialogue. I was like really self-critical, and I think it started as kind of a way to like protect myself, like being self-deprecating, but it just evolved to where I was really mean mm-hmm. to myself. And it took me a little while to even just recognize like how mean I was to myself in a way that I would never be mean to another person. But even after like realizing it, that was something that took me, you know, like multiple years to slowly get out of this pattern of negative like self-talk.
Mm, yeah. I mean, I totally obviously understand as a woman, and just how like your body changes, but also how a lot of times your emotions in terms of feeling invalidated or self-deprecation it's either brushed over or it's actually enforced by other people, because it's kind of expected in our society. Kind of hate mm-hmm. yourself, hate your body, and just not like yourself as a woman. Mm-hmm. So I think that's really interesting that tied into that you were able to make that connection with your mental state, and then, you know, actually working towards that. And you obviously went to a great college that is really advancing in all of that. So yeah, that's really cool. But what type of things did you do to like start on that feminine journey mm-hmm. that helped you?
Yeah, I think it was a really slow process. I honestly feel like I've done more mental health work with that in the past year than I have even before that. I think mm-hmm. that for me, a big part of it was realizing how much I was letting other people and the way that they thought about me really influence my own perception of myself and the way that I perceived my body was through this lens of what I thought other people were seeing me as, if that makes sense. And I feel like especially when you're in that age frame of like 16 to like 20 or so, you know, you get so many comments, like so many unsolicited comments. That mm-hmm. was just a really difficult thing for me. It started like when I was in high school, and, you know, I had kind of bad friendships where people were commenting on my body and commenting on how I looked. And as I got older, it's, you know, catcalling and stuff like that. And I think it just made me feel super uncomfortable just having a body in the first place. Even when I got good compliments on my body, it was uncomfortable to me that people were perceiving my body, particularly because, you know, I was raised by my dad. A lot of the things that he told me growing up was like, well, you need to be careful and you need to not dress in a certain way. And I definitely had some of that messaging of like, okay, it's on you to be in control of the way people perceive you. And when people were perceiving me in ways that felt like I didn't want, it was really difficult for me. So yeah, I think that it's still something that I'm trying to figure out the best way to deal with even to this day. I think now I just feel more like I don't care because, you know, people always have something to say. And I think especially as a young woman, like you're always going to get comments from men about how you look and what they think about how you look and how they feel like they're complimenting you and all these random things that are so, so insignificant. And it is so, it's such a crazy part of our society that we have these unsolicited comments that just come to us. But I think I have gotten to a place where I feel like I can just filter them out a little bit more and it doesn't affect me so much. And I think that kind of circles back to like having a more positive self-talk. I don't blame myself anymore for the way that people are looking at me, whether they think it's good or bad. So yeah, I think that, you know, just having like a sense of value in yourself that's outside of how you look is really important to develop. And it's not the easiest thing to develop when you're like growing up. Yeah, I'm getting to that place where I can see that a little bit more clearly now, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely a journey. It's definitely a transformation that you have to do, that you have to go on intentionally, because if you don't, then nothing happens. So it has to be intentional. And I'm so glad that you have my sister in your life, because she's very, very into that,
yes,
for sure. And she always pulls me into those conversations. And I'm like, I'm just sitting here, like, minding my business.
Yeah. But yeah, I do feel like female friendships can be just so powerful in that way. Like having just one woman who can open up your eyes to like the ways that you are letting people kind of influence you and control you as a woman. It is truly so beneficial. And I'm so grateful for your sister too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, yeah. Well, community is what I really, really think helps so many people just with everything, with mental health, with body, with just everything, just with living as a human, because we're social creatures, even though we pretend that we aren't. And especially women need to connect to each other away from men and just like have that community and have these conversations and have that self-work all together. So yeah, that's amazing that you that came along into your life and found you and helped you out. You said that you did meditation a lot. When did you start meditating, or how have you done meditation?
Yeah, I started meditating really only in the past few months, like since the start of this year. I saw this meditation video popped up in my YouTube like algorithm for some reason, and I watched it, and it was kind of a guided morning meditation, and it was kind of just a series of affirmations, I guess. And I remember just like listening to the entirety of this video. It was like a 15-minute video or something, and I just felt so good after. I was like, I have to like listen to this again. So I feel like that's how it started for me. I wasn't intentionally like, okay, I'm going to sit down and meditate and I'm going to turn everything off. And I feel like even now when I meditate, I mostly do guided meditation videos or like talk through or like some sort of music or something, because I just can't have it be totally quiet. For me, one of the biggest things I get from meditation is I think of the goal as just kind of quieting my mind and giving my mind the space to not have thoughts for a little bit of the day. And I think that has been really positive for me. I just feel better having that time. And it does feel like a real refresh for me to end a meditation session is like, I feel like is one of the best feelings. But yeah, I feel like, you know, meditation doesn't work for everyone. It can be really daunting to a lot of people because of the way that we talk about meditation. We're like, oh, you have to do it this way. And it's like, it seems like there's a set of rules that you need to follow to meditate. But personally, I think there's a lot of different ways to meditate. And some days I'll only meditate for 5 minutes, really. But I think that any length of time and any way that you can find yourself being comfortable meditating, I think it's just a cool thing to try to kind of have another tool to soothe your mind, I guess.
Yeah. Well, I'm always telling people the benefits of meditation neurologically. However, it's not in my habits. I'm more of a, you know, the workout girl, which obviously they go hand in hand. But I definitely understand just like the refresh. I actually did a meditation today early this morning after my workout. And it was actually very, very good. And I did feel refreshed. It's great when you close your eyes and then you open them back up. You feel like you're just restarting.
Yeah.
Someone click your restart button.
Yeah, definitely. And I agree with the working out too. Like I don't meditate every single day, but I feel like it's just another one of those tools to make you feel better, just like working out.
Yeah, just don't put it on this whole pedestal that
people put on. Yeah, I feel like, you know, the way mental health people talk about meditation sometimes can just make it so much scarier than it is.
Yeah, yeah, it's more just like just taking the time to sit and be open and just breathe. Oh, yeah. So has like COVID affected you at all? Or how has it affected you? How are you dealing with the pandemic? You're in San Francisco, so it's still pretty lockdown, correct? Or no?
It's starting to open back up now. I'm in the Bay Area, so not the actual city. But yeah, I think people are starting to get vaccinated for sure. And things are slowly opening back up. We're just having a little bit of like indoor dining opening up again for the first time. So yeah, I think this last year has been really weird for me. I had a huge life change right before COVID, which was moving to New York for school. And I was there for like 6 months. And when COVID started, I just like moved home again. So it was really difficult to adjust back to that. And I live at home with my dad, which is, you know, poses its own set of issues. I think it's definitely not the best for either of us. So yeah, I don't know. I think it's been such a difficult time. I feel like I don't like to think about what has been difficult about it because I have had so many amazing things happen this year. I think just being in this kind of isolation has really given me the time and space to reflect on some things. And I think that in the short time that I was at school and living in New York, I was learning a lot, especially through meeting Anna. I learned so much about, I don't know, just new ways of looking at things. And I feel like I had a lot to process. So in a way, I feel grateful that I had this extra time to kind of process things in a new way. And I definitely feel like whenever this ends, I'm gonna be a better person for it. So yeah, I feel like I'm not totally sure about my next steps, as I've talked to you about before. But I feel like one of my biggest takeaways from this year was I wanted to stop making choices for other people. I think this year really helped me to realize how much I was doing things to make other people happy or make other people feel like I was good or successful. And I think that just is another layer of how we let people and their opinions kind of affect us, you know? Yeah, it's been a long year of realizing that and trying to move past that. But yeah, I feel like for this next stage of my life, I am just trying to do the things I'm interested in, regardless of what other people think about them, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, that sounds like super great. And also might have been a good timing, or I don't know if it was good timing, but to have your hardest struggles earlier before the pandemic, so you were equipped to like knew about meditation, so you could start doing it in your practice to help you not, you know, fall into a downward spiral. Instead, you were able to keep yourself afloat, and it seems like even go higher and reach higher and have a higher goal or eye on where you want to be.
Yeah, I will say when the pandemic started, I don't think I was at that place. I feel like I definitely hit some rock bottoms, especially towards the start of the pandemic. I think as so many people did, but really like since 2021 started, I feel like I've had a lot better ways of coping with things and dealing with things.
I'm glad to hear that you were able to do that and that you really sound like you're in an amazing place, or a place where there's just so much opportunity and just a lot of doors that are being opened, and you can feel that fresh air coming through. And you do have like so much ahead of you. Like you graduated, which is a huge accomplishment. And I hope that you celebrated that and just acknowledge how huge that is. Just the knowledge that like you can be in a place that you feel all of these energies and you also are at a higher place than you were a year ago just offers so much hope. It's just like a real life example that we do have rock bottoms and we do have dips, and life isn't one like straight line up, and there's a lot of like hills and mountains and dragons that we have to fight and all these things, a little, you know, underground, but it's great to hear that you are doing a lot better than you were.
Yeah. Going off of what you said, something I have been thinking about more recently is how being sad is still kind of part of my life. I think that when I first started like trying to deal with my depression, I was like, okay, I'm gonna deal with this and then it'll stop. It'll stop being a problem. I'll just stop being depressed and it won't come back. And I feel like the more like I've been on this journey, the more I'm like, okay, that's not totally realistic. I think there's always going to be periods of my life where I feel sad. But I think the cool thing about having like all these different tools to deal with it is that it just gets a little bit shorter every time, those feelings of sadness. So I think that has been a cool part of the year for me, as well as kind of understanding the role of depression in my life.
Okay. Amazing. Great to hear. It was great talking to you, Kamini.
Yeah, you
I have
too.
One more question. What would you tell your younger self about depression? Or what would you tell, say, if you had a younger sister who you saw yourself in, what would you tell them?
Yeah, the biggest thing I would say is to try and find someone you can talk to. And I think it's such a difficult piece of advice to give, because I'm sure someone tried to say that to me when I was younger and I totally didn't listen. I was definitely the type of kid who did not want to talk to anyone. But I think it's so important to find someone, like whoever that is, someone who can give you real advice, who's not just, you know, when you're in school, if you're like in high school or something, as much as like your friends can listen to you, you really want to talk to someone who can give you real substantive advice. And I feel like a lot of times that is like an adult in your life, or, you know, a family friend or someone like that, someone who's older than you, who has a little bit more experience. That first step can be so hard, especially when you don't want to admit that you have depression. But I think, yeah, I think that is the biggest piece of advice I would give. Just find someone you can talk to.
Yeah, that is so, so important. And I definitely second that. So I learned so much through like being the worst student possible. I more or less did not do anything that they tell you to do until I just made the decision, this isn't working and I have to get better. But before that, I was the worst student. Or I don't know, maybe it's the best student, but like I didn't do anything. Well, Kamini, thank you so much for being here. Thank you so much for sharing your story, for sharing your knowledge, for sharing your love. You're beautiful inside and out. I hope you understand that. You have such a great, beautiful soul, so kind. And I can't wait to keep talking to you. But yeah, so thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you. I just want to say I really appreciate, you know, the space that you've created to talk about this. And I'm so excited to hear all the rest of your podcast and all the rest of the content that you have to provide for us on depression. So I'm excited to see what you do next.
Wasn't that amazing? Wasn't that great? Thank you again, Kamini, for your vulnerability and just for your willingness to share this with us. We truly, truly appreciate it. I know I truly appreciate it. Here's some of my takeaways. Treat yourself like someone that you care about, that someone that you love, that someone that you would be friends with. Self-deprecating thoughts, self-deprecating words, and the way that we treat our bodies and ourselves do affect our mental health. The body is connected to us, just like our mind and our brain and our soul is connected to us, our body is connected to us. Two, I just want to address gender. I think that gender is implicated in this no matter what you identify as. It's part of your story, it's part of yourself, and it should not be separated from your depression at all. If you feel that you're depressed and you feel that it is connected to your identity as a human, as a person, either whether it be race, whether it be class, whether it be economic status, whether it be gender, whether it be sexuality, anything, whether it be citizenship, anything that is connected, and you're not crazy in thinking about that. As someone who thinks about depression in a social and cultural sense, from a bottom-up sense, it just makes sense. Of course, your identity and of course where you stand in the world is going to impact your mental health, because one of the causes for mental health is status and respect, or the lack of status and respect. Three, just validating sadness. Likewise to body and just to social identity and status and respect, there are real reasons for sadness. Life isn't sad, I don't think, but it is a part of it, and it must be recognized and honored for what it is. We cannot be depressant or sadness immune. That just isn't part of being human. But we can be resilient and cultivate tools or a life that can support us through these really rainy seasons. Last but not least, I really believe that, Kamini, you were right in talk to someone, seek advice. We are herd animals. We are part of a community. We're made to be communal. We are not made to be individual, even though we do live in a society that is very individualistic. We as a community have a collective wealth of knowledge that we can lean on and that we can learn from. You are not alone in your depression. You're not alone in any struggle that you have, in any conflict that you have. You don't just have to do the work to, quote, figure out your problems alone. There is always someone who has been there, who has a story that's similar to you, or who understands the feelings. Even if their situation is nothing like your situation, the feelings are human, the feelings are genuine, and I'm sure most, if not all people, do know that feeling and can resonate with you. And some people will be able to offer you actual advice and offer you comfort and offer you empathy to move through this and deal with it and maybe even learn something from it. We have to do the work outside and recognize that we in ourselves sometimes don't have the answer, or that speaking to someone about it and finding the answer through other people, through the collective knowledge, is one, faster, easier, and actually creates connection and is part of living an antidepressant life. Because community in and of itself is made to support us and made to hold us up in our rainy patches, in our rough times, in our depression, and really just hold us when we can't hold ourselves. So that's the end of today's episode. I hope that you heard something in Kamini's story that really resonated with you or just offered you a great understanding about depression and about what someone else's experience is, and that you're not alone. There are people out there that are depressed, that are struggling every single day, and there are people out there who have actually risen from the darkest place, from the rock bottom, and are living and breathing and really showing up in life. Okay, so action of the week is to think of someone and to try to broach that topic in talking about mental health. I really, really encourage people to do this. I know that I've said before that this is something I've struggled with, so I totally understand the shyness, the vulnerability, the fear of literally talking about this. But I really want you to try to push yourself, at least talking about it, maybe in a theoretical, vague, hypothetical sense, not individually, not about your personal struggles or your personal experience. I really, really hope that you're able to do that, and just know that I'm rooting for you. Last but not least, if you have any questions or comments, please reach out to me. You can DM me on Instagram. I will definitely respond at Arena Erickson. And if this podcast touched you in any way, if anything resonated with you, share it with a friend, share the podcast with one person, and spread the knowledge, spread the wealth. Even if they're not depressed, hopefully it'll just give them a greater understanding about depression, which we definitely need in this world. So I hope you guys have a wonderful week. I'm sharing your love. You are worthy. You matter. And thank you just so much for being here.